done fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hi, this is Tim Dennis from Darkness Radio, and you're listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 358 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, as usual, we want to start off thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to all of you men, women, and service animals for everything you do.
Yes, we deeply appreciate you guys so much. And thank you for having our backs. Continue prayers for you guys every single day.
All right. It's coming up on Father's Day. A lot of people really struggle with the holidays, especially Mother's and Father's Day. I think those two really bring up a lot of memories for people who have lost their parents.
Yep, and I'll be one of them.
You know, and so with that being said, we know a lot of people struggle with that, as do just people on an everyday basis. I actually talked to somebody very close to me, a family member today, that's struggling with some stuff. And, you know, it just goes to show that nobody is, you know, exempt from having bad days, bad weeks, bad months. You know, we're all affected, and sometimes it can be the littlest thing that brings it to our attention.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. You just never know what people are dealing with. So
I'm personally happy that my family member had the courage, I'll say, to at least come to me and talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was very happy for that.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
And I would encourage every one of you to do the same thing. Look, I know it's tough to just come to somebody, especially sometimes a family member. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you feel like you should be embarrassed or something by it, and that's not the case. It's, you know, trust me, there's nothing to be embarrassed about if you're struggling with whatever the situation is. Your family members and your friends are there to help. And if they're not, they're not true friends or family members.
That's
true. And I'm just going to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So, guys, make sure you reach out to somebody. Reach out to our group. Reach out to Jerry or I. We can give you our phone numbers. You can also call the crisis hotline at 988. You can also text at 741-741. But we are all there for you guys.
You know, we say that every week, but we really haven't given our phone numbers out very often. It's on the website.
Yeah, we have given it out.
But I want to give mine out again. It's area code 502-817-0899. So if you need to talk, I promise you, I may not pick up the phone as soon as you call because I might be involved in something else. But I promise if you call and leave a message, I will call you back. If you text me, I will text you back.
True story.
So.
And my phone number is 502-639-5053. Hit the girl up. Hit me up, girl.
Tracy loves just random text messages too. like I just love the color of your hair, or I like your the Tracy wraps. So if you want to send some of those texts, feel free to send her those.
Well, you guys are very sweet. But anyway, yeah, please reach out. We love y'all.
All right, Tracy. So we're going to do, I was going to say a story we haven't done in a while, but that really is not accurate either. We're going to do a musician story, but it's not like Rock and Roll and the Occult. This is just actually a story that happened to a musician, and I thought it was pretty cool, so
okay.
I thought we would do it. Tracy, I would say most people know who Alice Cooper, the singer, is, even if you don't listen to his music.
Yes, of course.
He's one of those people that he's been around since the late 60s, early 70s. And I think most people they know who he is. Mm-hmm. He's just, you know, just like Kiss. You might not listen to Kiss, but you know who they are. And it's mainly because of the makeup and stuff like that. So we're not really going to talk about Alice's career, although I will say he's a super nice guy and he's very religious.
Yes, very. And I think he actually came to a church out here, didn't he?
Yeah, when he I think whenever he's in town on a Sunday, mm-hmm. he goes to a local church.
Yeah, he does actually.
But so. He also has his own food banks and stuff that he set up, and he actually goes out and serves food to people who are in need. So
very nice gentleman.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that he's super smart. He's got like, I don't know, I can't remember. He's got a bunch of degrees and speaks a couple of different languages. And
wow.
And he's a good golfer.
Oh, no way.
Neither here nor there. All right. But Alice, I would say, is probably more well known for starting that horror genre of music mm-hmm. with the makeup and the creepy stuff. He was literally the first to wear the scary makeup. And he would do things on stage like... what would you call it? An animatronic monster type
yes,
thing. Like he would have like, you know, these giant Frankenstein come out on stage at one part. And he even does a thing where he brings a guillotine
yes,
out
uh-huh.
and does like a fake beheading on stage. Uh-huh. And stuff. So he was the first to really start doing all that. Some of the people would call it shock rock.
Oh, yeah. But he puts on a great show.
Right. He does. With that being said, Alice Cooper had a paranormal experience back when, I think it was 1982, and he had really struggled, we'll say. He was having a rough time with alcohol and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
and he decided to check himself into rehab.
Well, good for him.
Well, he just finishes this stint, so he gets out of rehab, and he decided, you know what? I just spent time in a damn mental hospital for getting off of alcohol. I probably need to take it a little easy and not rush right back into things. He talks to his manager and he says, look, I'm the stereotype of a rock star. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done everything that I probably shouldn't done. And at the same time, for the last 20 years, everybody's done everything for me. I've not done anything for myself.
Oh.
You know, you always got assistance.
Right, of course.
I mean, he said that he didn't even make phone calls. He said he didn't write checks, nothing. He said he probably hadn't picked up a phone and literally talked to anybody in 5 years.
Oh, my gosh.
He definitely wouldn't make any phone calls. But he says, you know what? I want to start doing stuff for myself. He's talking to his manager, a guy by the name of Shep. And he told him, he said, you know what? I don't think I want to do anything on stage right now. And I want to start off kind of slow. And I want to just relax. But I still want to be active. Well, Shep says, well, you know, we got offered a horror movie in Spain. They just want you to write the soundtrack.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, you know what? He reads the script. It's a movie called Monster Dogs. And he said it was kind of where the splatter films were basically just the blood and gore type movies
yeah.
were really starting to come out.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's at the same time that like Halloween had really hit it big in the late 70s, and you had the Nightmare on Elm Street movies and all that starting to come. So it was that time frame where people were starting to kind of get into gore and stuff like that. And I haven't seen this movie, but obviously Monster Dog probably says it all. It's some kind of a
mm-hmm.
Cujo type
yeah.
movie where dog goes ballistic. Alice really liked the thought of doing the soundtrack for the movie. And he always wanted to work with Joe Perry, the guitarist from Aerosmith.
Yeah.
At that time, Joe Perry had also just completed a stint in rehab.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. I think that's when Aerosmith had broken up and,
oh, okay.
and all that after their original stint. Alice felt that both of them were fragile people. At the moment, just coming out of rehab, and it would be great for both of them to work together.
Makes a lot of sense.
He said they're both just getting back in the swing of things, the real world and everything. Why not? Let's get together and ease into stuff. So Joe Perry was completely excited about the project. He's like, great, let's do it. So Alice asked his manager, Shep, he's like, where can we go to work on these songs? And, you know, musicians are funny people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Alice had a house, a nice house. I'm sure Joe Perry had a nice house. Why not just go to one of your houses and work for it? You know,
maybe they needed somewhere.
You probably need a studio. I would think they would have enough to be able to at least work on it. Maybe you can go somewhere afterwards and record after you got the stuff written. But you hear these stories all the time. Yeah. About, you know, and that's what the whole Foo Fighters 666 Studios movie, and stuff was all based on.
Oh, yeah.
Like that type of stuff. But anyways, Shep says, you know what? I own a house in Copeg, New York. The house is abandoned. Nobody's lived in it for a while. Feel free to use it. Well, they liked it. And when I say abandoned, I don't mean abandoned like the place is falling apart. I mean, the place is still fully furnished. Not, there just wouldn't anybody live in it.
Right.
Alice said, you know what? I kind of like it. Let's do it. So Alice calls up Joe Perry. They agree to go to this house in New York to write these songs. Alice shows up with his assistant. Joe shows up with his assistant. Both, though, said the house was kind of ominous looking when they showed up. They got a creepy vibe. And speaking of creepy vibes, since, again, I forgot to mention it, we actually have special guest on after this. It's Toby and Simeon from Golden Age of Murder.
Ooh,
and
nice.
It's cool, but they actually live in different countries. So there's a five-hour time difference, so it's hard for them to get time together to record.
Oh, my goodness,
well, Toby lives over in London. England. And then Simeon lives over here in the United States.
Oh, my goodness.
But we had a fun chat with them, so we'll talk with them in a little bit. So back to Alice and Joe Perry. They're in this house. They say it feels kind of ominous. They said it kind of just set all by itself on this big piece of land. So there's a lot of land there. The house is just sitting there. They said it looked desolate. And the only thing cool about it was it had a lake. But even the lake looked eerie.
Oh my gosh.
Not Lake Erie, but it looked eerie.
I wonder why that guy just...
I don't know. I actually meant to try to look up some backstory on it. I couldn't find anything. And I kind of gave up without putting a lot of effort into it. Alice said that this place looked like a place that you wouldn't exactly, or it didn't look like a place you would ride by and say, you know what, let's stay there. He was like, oh, well, it's an old bleak house. What the hell? You know, we're just going to be doing, you know, some songs and writing some stuff out and trying to work on. Who cares? Well, the group all chose their bedrooms where they were going to stay. Alice gets in his bedroom. He puts a suitcase up on the bed and he kind of opens it, looking around some stuff. And he flips the top. You know how a suitcase are. You flip the top open where you can got access to everything. He goes into the bathroom. I don't know what he does. He didn't tell me. He walks out of the bathroom almost immediately. Now, keep in mind, this bathroom is like attached to his bedroom. So he's not leaving the bedroom and going
what
to the outer bathroom.
What is it called? An ensuite?
Yeah, it's right there. Yeah, an ensuite. He's right there. But he goes in the bathroom. He comes back. Well, his suitcase is now closed. He zipped back up.
Oh, my gosh.
His automatic assumption is that his assistant had actually come in there while he was in the bathroom. So now he walks back into the bathroom, and the water is running in the sink. Now, he doesn't think that he turned the water on, and he knows for a fact that his assistant didn't do it, because he would have had to walk right past him to get into the bathroom, and that didn't happen. So Alice walks back in the bathroom, he turns the water off, walks back in the bedroom, and again, he assumes his assistant must have came in there, because now there are two or three shirts laid out on the bed.
Oh, stop.
So somebody's taken them out of the suitcase.
Oh.
A suitcase that was closed the last time he saw it.
Yes.
Now it's unzipped and there's three shirts laying out on the bed. He goes to his assistant, Bob, and he says, hey, were you helping me unpack earlier? And Bob's like, no, I've been in my bedroom unpacking myself. So Alice starts thinking, you know what? It's me. I just got out of the hospital. Maybe I'm a little bit off today.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess. And you know, Alice Cooper, I started doing the math on this. He was only like 32 at this time.
Oh, really?
I always think about him being old because
because
he's old now. He's in his like 75.
I know, and that's crazy.
He was like 32 back then. He says, I think it'd be better if I just get writing these songs. Because I think, you know, I just got out of the hospital. Plus, I'm probably anxious because I'm doing something for the first time. It's kind of a big deal to write these songs. So I need to just get writing them, and maybe most of this will go away. I'm sure I'm just imagining stuff. All right. Then he starts thinking, but you know what? I know I didn't unpack them shirts.
Mm-hmm.
I might have turned that water on. I might have not unzipped my boots, but I know I didn't unpack those shirts.
Yeah, I mean, I would think you would know that part at least.
So now he's back to being a little more anxious. He knows nobody had been in the room, so who else could have done it? So now he starts thinking, well, what next? What the hell next can happen?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that day, he and Joe start writing songs. Everything's going smoothly. Alice said they actually were having a great time together. And he said, when you work with a skilled guitarist like Joe Perry, you just basically go to him and say, hey, Joe, play me a bunch of riffs or whatever you've had running through your head, and I'll try to put some lyrics to it. It's the best way to do it. They got some things done, and they both decided, you know what? It's been a good day. It's been a full day. Let's go ahead and rest up a little bit, and then we'll either pick it back up tonight or we'll pick it up tomorrow. We'll play it by ear. We're in no rush. But mysterious things kept happening to Alice the entire day. He'd put a shirt down. He'd go in the other room, walk back in. The shirt's gone. He felt that it was kind of prankish, kind of like, I don't know, a force that was just moving and hiding items.
Yeah, so these things are only happening to him.
Yes.
Okay.
He thinks.
Okay.
He felt like it was almost like, oh, this is Alice Cooper, you know, the big scary rock star. Let's kind of have some fun with him. But he also felt like it was something that a child would do. It's not mm-hmm. something like an adult would do. It's,
right.
You know. So Alice said it all felt juvenile until later that night. After Alice and Joe were done working on their second stint for the night, everybody agreed that they were hungry. So they fix up some sandwiches and stuff. They're sitting at the dining room table, chowing down, and they start hearing this ungodly type moan.
Oh my! Oh, they all did?
All did.
Ooh.
They're all sitting at the table. There's four of them. They're hearing this.
I can just see them all looking at each other right now.
And the table set right above the basement.
Mm-hmm.
When the first big sound occurred, Alice thought, you know what? That must be coming from the boiler.
Uh-huh.
It's an old house. It's got old pipes. And that sound happens, you know, every once in a while from a boiler. I've heard something similar. But then the sound happens again. And then Alice thought, wow, if I didn't know that this was the pipes, that would be pretty damn scary. A boiler can make a few noises, but this literally sounded like furniture being dragged across a wooden floor.
Oh, my.
So at this time, Alice looks at Joe Perry and says, you know, it's been kind of weird today. The whole day's been off. I've been a little bit off. Every time I put something down, I go back in, walk in the other room, come back, and it wasn't there. Or it was in a different location where I had put it, and, you know, I just knew that I didn't leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wouldn't you know, he gets a response back from Joe, and Joe says, you too? I thought it was just me.
Oh, wow.
And
and then they throw
he said, no, I thought I was going insane. And Joe's assistant then chimes in. He said, it wasn't just you guys, because every time I put a guitar string down, it would disappear or show up somewhere else. Alice's assistant, Bob, started saying basically the same thing was happening to him. So all four of them were having the exact same things happening in different rooms, and none of them knew about the other until they sat down at dinner.
So I'm sure they at once were all like, oh, we're relieved, like, okay, we're not crazy. But then it set in like, okay, what the hell?
Right. Right. So now you got all four having the exact same thing happen. Alice starts to think that, you know what, maybe this isn't for me. This place. I mean, he's trying to be realistic. I mean, he just got out of a mental hospital.
Mm-hmm.
He's went through a lot.
Of course.
You know, he don't want to have to deal with this too. Now, at about this point, something underneath them is definitely going on. And they all notice it.
Oh my gosh.
As the noise gets louder, you can actually hear stuff moving below.
No.
Like being thrown around. Job was like, "Do you hear that?" And Alice said, "Hey, does anybody else care that there's literally something going on downstairs?" So they were all kind of staring at each other, and they're saying, you know, it's pretty hard not to tell, and it's really hard not to care because it was so loud.
Well, I'm surprised they hadn't called Shep yet. I'm like, dude.
Right.
What kind of place did you put us in?
So the four decide to go downstairs and check out the situation.
Ooh, they all went downstairs? Yes,
they grabbed their flashlights and stuff. They said the basement was ice cold. Alice said it was as if it had its own built-in coldness about it.
Ooh.
They went down the stairs with their flashlights and stuff. Alice said that he felt that the basement was definitely inhabited by something other than humans.
Oh my gosh.
He said, you know what? It's as if we were going into their place. So Alice was down there with his flashlight. He's just kind of looking around. And he felt the pressure of a hand on his back. He said there was no doubt that it was a hand because you could feel each individual finger like the hand was spread out. He knew that it definitely wasn't like a blunt object.
Yeah.
Well, Alice wasn't really sure, and he says, "All right, Joe, very funny." But Joe was on the other side of the room, and he was like, "What?" Alice said he was starting to panic a little bit, and he said, "There's a hand in my back right now." And then they all took off running. He said they could not get out of that room fast enough.
Oh my gosh.
Alice said he didn't want to go back down there. And honestly, he said, I really didn't want to write songs here anymore.
Well, I'm surprised. Did they end up staying the night?
Well, they all agreed that they would spend the night and leave first thing in the morning.
Well, I'm surprised they did that.
So the following morning, they're leaving. Alice said, "Look, I play the villain on stage, and I'm not used to playing the hero, and I sure wouldn't go play one here." So he said, "I was ready to go." He didn't say that. I did.
That's so the best thing ever.
They're leaving, and as they're leaving, he said he remembers looking out over the lake. And he kept getting a vision. He didn't necessarily see it.
Yeah.
But he had a vision of an old man just standing there looking over the lake. And he thought, well, this is odd. Why am I seeing this? The next day, Alice calls up his manager. And he said,
"Shep, dude, man."
He's like, "Hey, Shep, is there anything you'd like to tell me about that house?" And Shep said, "No, why?" And he's like, "Well, because we had to leave. That place is haunted as hell."
Mm-hmm.
And Shep went on to tell him that the first family that lived there, they had to deal with some tragedy. That family was the one who had the house built.
Oh, okay.
One of the kids drowned in that lake.
Oh, no.
And he said people had seen the old man looking out at the lake. The same thing that Alice had seen.
Oh.
He said it was said that the old man would spend hours in the basement just throwing things out of anger.
Aw, that's sad.
Alice seems to think that it was maybe the child in the house playing all the pranks,
mm-hmm.
but it was probably definitely the dad.
Yeah.
Because it sounded like stuff was being thrown around in the basement.
Oh my gosh,
so they think
yeah.
the dad was occupying the basement.
Aw.
He thanked his manager for sending a fragile rock star to a haunted house. He said, "Thanks for sending me to a haunted house," and just like, "Yeah, go ahead and write some songs."
Mm-hmm.
Alice believes that different places around the world definitely have their own history, and they certainly were not the only inhabitants of this house. And he felt that they were trespassing on their property.
Yeah. Well, at least it didn't happen. Nothing happened to them like the Foo Fighters when they went to that house, so...
That's true.
Safe.
And then afterwards, you had that tragedy that happened to Taylor Hawkins.
I know.
So, I mean, I know.
And I still most can't get over that. That's say so sad.
That's just, you know, a coincidence. But
yeah. You never know.
I wonder, I really wonder what the Foo Fighters feel about that movie after his death. I'm sure they loved it. It was fun and it was a great time by everybody making it. But I wonder if they look at it differently.
I would.
Afterwards.
I would definitely. That was a.
I bet they have a hard time watching it now.
Oh, I wouldn't. I know. They do. I mean, for us, you know, for us fans, it's so hard to even deal with that he's gone, but especially, you know, his own brother. So, I don't know. That was a cool story, though. I wish I could meet Alice and ask him about this, like this story. Say, dude, what, you know.
I keep working on trying to get Alice on the show. Mm-hmm. I think he would do it if I can find a way to get a hold of him.
But, yeah.
You know, I talked to a disc jockey. I'm sorry. On-air personality friend of mine, and he didn't. He's had Alice on his show, but he didn't have any contact information.
Oh,
so I was hoping.
Yeah, it would be nice. It would be like a real honor because, like you said, he's a really, really caring and giving individual. And I mean, can you imagine him just showing up to your church and everybody, and all of a sudden everybody's like, "Oh my God, is that Alice Cooper? How cool would that be?"
Yeah, it'd be like Mr. Nice Guy, where he's got to show up incognito.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know that he was always that religious, but he definitely is super religious now, which is, it's, you know, it's like he said, the stuff he does on stage, it's...
Yeah, it's just all for show.
You know, some people, like Marilyn Manson, he does a lot of blasphemic type stuff that people, you know, the 666 and number, all that stuff. He does stuff like that, so I can see... How some people could say, oh, well, that's just an act. But at the same time, you couldn't be real religious and do an act like that because it kind of goes against what you believe. But Alice doesn't do anything like that.
Yeah.
It's like horror type stuff, but it's not blasphemic type stuff.
Yeah, I agree. That was a cool story.
Yeah, that's our story on Alice Cooper.
Nice. I like that.
Tracy, let's take a quick sponsor break. We'll be back with the guys from the Golden Age of Murder and a couple little... tidbits of information on some upcoming shows.
All right. Sounds great.
All right, Tracy. So we put on our show for the Bell Mansion. 50 tickets available.
Mm-hmm.
We've already sold 10 of them.
Well, that's amazing. Good.
And keep this in mind, that's Labor Day weekend, September 2nd. That's Saturday. That's in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's us and Justin Rimmel from Mysterious Circumstances. Tickets are $75. They're limited to 50 people. So now there's only 40 left. But that gets you a tour of the Bell Mansion. It gets you the meet and greet with us and Justin, the live event, and then from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., an investigation of the Bell Mansion.
Yeah, that's
so you get
be cool.
a lot for the money.
Right, and it's the place looks incredible.
If you've ever done an investigation on one of these places, it will usually cost you $75 to $100 just for the investigation. And they usually require you to have a group of 10 people. At a lot of these places. So this gives you an opportunity to be able to spend $75, get the investigation, plus a tour, plus a live show. So
sounds awesome. I can't wait. Now I'm not sure about just staying all night crap. You know how I go.
Yeah, that's the other thing. So Tracy and I and Justin are spending a night, and out of those 50 people who buy tickets, and keep in mind, some of those 50 people are going to be couples. So... Or they'll buy, somebody will buy three tickets or something like that. So there won't be 50 people to choose from, but the names of whoever bought tickets, we're going to draw a winner, and that person and one person that they choose are going to spend the night with us.
Oh, fun.
So my guess is there'll probably be 30 people or so in that drawing.
Okay, great. That sounds wonderful. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolute
blast. We're very excited about this.
And then, of course, the next show coming up is Buffalo. I will tell people tickets are starting to sell quick for that one. It always does right before the show. Buy your tickets now to see us, Brohio, and Justin in Buffalo. And as I always say, we're going up early to check out Niagara Falls. And if you've never been to Canada, you're right there on the border. So you can cross over to Canada. We got some of our friends from the Toronto area making it down.
Oh, good.
And Tyler Allen.
Yes.
From Minds of Madness. That is literally one of the craziest big time podcasts out there. It's amazingly big.
And I don't know how I got in the mix with all you crazy dudes. It's just like little old me and all you crazy people.
You remember when that first time we did a show? It was like, it was three I don't know, Rebels and Tracy or something. The first time.
What was that called? That was so funny.
It was the three somethings of Bod Pod, because we were at Bomb Pod Media.
Yeah.
It was the three somethings of Bomb Pod and Tracy.
I'm like, oh.
That was like the first live show we ever did.
Yeah, it was. It was fun, though. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so this will be a blast up there. Get your tickets as soon as you possibly can. We've only got, I think, 115 tickets that were available when we started.
Mm-hmm.
And that I got a feeling this one's going to sell out, because all of our shows so far have sold out, luckily.
I know. We're blessed. Thank you guys. Yeah, thank you guys so much.
And then immediately after, we have Detroit.
Wow.
So, suburb of Detroit. I say that lovingly.
Yes, of course.
Some people just, I don't know. We typically, anytime we say a city, mm-hmm. it's never actually in the city.
Right.
The only time we've ever done one in the city, I think, was in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just because it was an old-time, cool-ass theater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That we got a really good deal on.
Yeah.
But usually if we say it's Cincinnati or if it's in... Right. It's usually a suburb of Cincinnati. So I don't ever want people to feel like that they have to... Are they going to have trouble finding a place to park, or mm-hmm. they're going to have trouble with, you know, crime or safety or something like that. We always take that in account.
Of course.
Trust me. All right. What else we got going on? The cruise. The cruise is really starting to heat up, literally.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to have Robin on here in the next couple of weeks to talk about some stuff.
Great. Sounds great.
There we go.
I can hurry up and get here, too.
Yep. HillbillyHorrorStories.com. You can find tickets to all this stuff and more information on all of it if you're just curious. All right, Tracy, what do you got going on over there?
All right. For iTunes, we have Spiders from Mars, Mojo Lobster, and Vicky D. Thank you, guys. Your reviews are so awesome, and it just makes my heart so happy. Unless it's a bad review, then I cry. No, I don't really. But thank you, guys, for taking the time to do that, because it really does mean a lot to us. And like we've said before, it does help us get our name out there and stuff like that. So
there's nothing more important to the show than those reviews.
Mm-hmm.
It what happens is when you get a bunch of reviews in 1 week, your podcast kind of gets listed up higher on iTunes, so more people find it that way.
Yeah.
It's not buried beneath a bunch.
Right, right. And then our Patreon this week is Robin Lloyd Davies. Thank you, doll, so much for your support. We appreciate you so much. You guys are the best.
Yes, and I do want to say, while we're giving out thank yous, Amanda and I started our new podcast. The first episode so dropped this Wednesday. And we've even had somebody leave a review for that on the Hillbilly Horror Story page. It's had, you guys have been super positive so far. We've not heard one negative comment, a lot more listens than we thought we were getting. And we had a lot of positive comments. I think this worked out a lot better. It's not as rude and crude, we'll say, as the last podcast we did. It's something I think literally everybody, it might not be family friendly, like Hillbilly Horror Stories is, but it's not too far off. I would say it's probably PG-13.
Mm, okay.
So, but a lot of people have liked it so far, and I just want to say thank you for the people who've listened to it. And if you haven't, it's under Wickedly Weird with Jerry and Amanda. Go listen and subscribe, and hopefully you like that too.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Always the best.
All right, let's listen to Simeon and Toby.
Let's do it.
Hey guys, this is a fun setup we got for you today, because I've got a couple of friends. I've got Toby and Simeon. They are the host of the Golden Age of Murder podcast. And what is cool about this setup is we've got one of the hosts in London, England, and we've got another host here in the United States. And I think that's pretty cool. I mean, they've got about a 5-6 hour time difference between them. So finding times to make this work has to be a pain in the neck. But it turns out fine if you listen to the podcast. So, guys, thanks so much for coming on with me today.
Very happy to.
Thank you for having us.
So, Toby, let's start with you. You're over in London. We talked a little bit before we started this thing. It's kind of a coincidence that the story that we're doing this week on Hillbilly Horror Stories is actually in London. I won't give it away as of yet, but I thought that was kind of fun. How did you and Simeon... How do you know each other? How did you hook up to do a podcast?
Well, I mean, it's the way most relationships start right now. It's through the wonderful power of social media. So, you know, we were on Twitter. I had started a podcast in 2018 called The Impressions of America. which was like following on from my academic history. So it was it's a history podcast on America. And I sort of used Twitter to do a little bit of engagement and to talk to people, but also like to develop friendships. And I developed a friendship with Simeon, who's a like very interesting guy, knows a lot about American history, and happened to be the person who knew the most about true crime that I had ever met, and seemed to have really quite big ideas about what, you know, serial killing in America from the post-war period to about the beginning of the 90s really meant, and why it happened and what it says about America. And it developed from there. It took us maybe about a year of talking about it before we started it, this podcast, The Golden Age of Murder. We wrangled about the name and things of that nature. And we've been doing it for about a year right now. About, I think, 15 episodes done. And I think I'd probably move on to Simeon to sort of talk more about it.
Yes, and yeah, what state are you in?
I am in Massachusetts. I'm originally born in California, but I grew up here in Massachusetts. And I don't have the Boston accent, but I grew up mostly in Boston. And I'm living right now in Gloucester, Massachusetts, which is on the coast.
Yeah, but I know exactly where it's at. So you were telling me a little bit earlier, and I'll have you rehash that now, mm-hmm. about the premise of the podcast and the history of post-war with how all that actually ties into the serial killing and stuff. So go ahead and tell me a little bit about that.
Well, after World War II, obviously America changes profoundly, and we've heard a lot about that. Whenever you look about, you know, what happened in the 1960s, the civil rights movement. You also have a lot of movies about crime. And one of the things we were looking at in the context of, we were trying to figure out how to, you know, what approach to take with this, because we decided to do a true crime podcast after we became friends on Twitter. And we were trying to decide what we're going to do a podcast about. And then we started to do true crime. And then we couldn't figure out where to start, because I knew a lot. And it's kind of hard to pick the entry point. And Toby happened to suggest this guy named Harvey Glattman, who's not very well known, but he was this guy who lured models through Lonely Hearts ads and as promising as a photographer in the 1950s. And he has these the infamous photos of these women who are bound, and he photographed them, and then he killed them. And he's not as well known, but he's a big deal in the history of crime, and the history particularly is a lot of really famous guys like the BTK killer. People know him, were inspired by these photos. He suggested that, and I remember thinking, well, how do we build from that? Because I'm always thinking, how can we turn this into a big sort of sprawling narrative, like a story form thing? And we're putting some of these ideas into it, and we both have a bit of an interest in looking at things in not like academic, but social science, a bit like popular social science, but also kind of how can it be interesting and how can it make people interested? But the thing was, is that we decided to take the Harvey Glattman thing as an entry point. Say, where can we go from that? And where we went from that was basically what starts in after World War II. In the time my parents grew up, I'm a bit older than Toby, you know, something starts. And one of the things is that the book that I drew on very heavily, called Sons of Cain by Peter Bronsky. And it's looking back a little bit to the history, kind of in like going back to when we were cavemen, of all this violence and how it is in our folklore and in science. You can see that, you know, and then the whole Cain and Abel story, why people are violent towards each other and why particularly it manifests particular kinds of violence that are personal to their psychology. But the thing was, we were thinking, what are we going to do? And we thought the post-war era, with a little bit of historical backdrop and scientific backdrop and maybe a little backdrop in folklore and scary stuff too, because if you look at it, we know that the whole popular thing is everything changed in the 1960s. But actually what happened was the change, as Peter Bronsky explores, and what I found looking into this, is really late in World War II. You had all these people who fought in World War II. My grandparents did. And, you know, and then they came home, and there was this kind of effort to just say, we won, we're on the rise. Let's just pretend it's going to be okay. and try to make things work. And we have this new prosperity. America is the new superpower. And that happens. But what also happens is you have all this crime that happens because of the social problems and these unaddressed problems. But also on top of that, you have this strange new wave of serial killers. And this has been in horror movies. Like you have, you know, like Psycho, which is inspired by Ed Gein from the 1950s and other things like that. But actually, a lot of the really famous ones, if you look, dig a little deeper, there's someone else that came before them or that inspired them or that tells you a little bit more. And so we were trying to think, why is it that you have this massive wave of crime and particularly serial murder and that kind of crime, you know, this sort of pathological, crazy sexual crime mostly, but or very personal motivations. Why does it explode in the post-war era up until the early 90s? And that's what we were sort of looking as the basic line. And then we were doing individual cases that play into that. But what we did also, after we did Harvey Glattman, we did two episodes looking at the history and the folklore and a little bit of science. One of them was focusing on the phenomenon of werewolves and vampires in France and Germany in the medieval period. And it looked a little bit of the Inquisitions and all these things. All this history is in our minds and it's in our brains and informs our stories. And it is informed by our stories. It's all there. And we get very, very morbid at times. And we try to focus more on just keeping the story going and getting people informed. And after our two episodes, we were looking at the history. We kind of got back into these cases in the 60s and 70s in particular. Some of them are famous. People will have heard of them. So we tried to take a different approach to that or but also inform people. And then some of them people won't have heard of as much. And we tried to balance that a little bit. And one thing is that the last couple episodes we've had, I got my new mic finally set up and the audio is a little better, but that's been an ongoing process, but it's also been an ongoing process to try to get the podcast, just sort of get, stuck into it because, I never podcasted before this. Toby had podcasted a couple podcasts, but I hadn't done it. This is my first experiment with it, but it's a nice outlet and you get interested in these things. And I got interested a little bit in this going back because I was very scared as a kid of bad things happening. And in some ways, this is kind of like a way to work that out in adulthood. And so each episode, other than the 2 and 3 is historical and a panorama and gets into folklore. And then everyone since then has been moving a little bit chronologically forward throughout the early 70s, the late 70s into the 1980s. We're in the middle of the 80s now. Our next episode is going to be on Richard Ramirez. And that's a famous one, but we did a few that were not famous. We did a guy who was mainly wanted for being a counterfeiter, and it turned out he was also a murderer and a rapist. But we were trying to keep a little bit of historical and cultural background to this, but also tell people individual stories and have this kind of unfold like a book. So each is a chapter. Each chapter leads into the next chapter, and it's kind of by the end of this series, I'm hoping we have a kind of a panoramic story that has like all these different chapters in it, but tells one story about the golden age of serial murder in the United States.
Toby, what have you, with doing all these cases here in the United States, what has that shown you as far as a difference between the United Kingdom and the United States as far as crime and serial killing and that type of stuff? Is there that big of a difference from what you see? Because obviously we don't hear as much on this side of the pond about what's going on with you guys other than Jack the Ripper. I mean, that's probably the most famous serial killer of all time. And, but I mean, we don't hear a lot of what's going on over there unless you're just a true crime enthusiast that hears all these stories. But has it something that just stands out to you that it's so much worse in America for like serial killing and stuff than it is over there? Or do you find that it's closer to the same than what we might realize?
I would say that America is probably a uniquely violent society and when compared to the rest of the Western world. And then there are many different reasons for that. I suppose the gun issue is one of the reasons for that. And America's probably a little bit more atomized. You have in the golden age of serial murder, one thing we've focused on is the highway system and how the highway system allowed a lot of, you know, not only hitchhiking, but a lot of predators to use hitchhiking to actually get rid of bodies. And the UK, although the UK has a, you know, fast motor system that was, you know, developed in the post-war period, it doesn't have a lot of inter-city travel at the same level, because a lot of the work is very, very tied into very specific metropolitan areas. It's the Lancashire area, there's the Midlands, but Lancashire is Liverpool, Manchester, the Midlands, and then down in London, where now a third of the, you know, population of the UK kind of lives in a very much more tightly constrained area. And so that kind of predatory activity is not, they're just not the same kind of opportunity for that. Although, of course, like, we did an episode on The Son of Sam, which focused on New York, you know, which is a more tightly constrained area. And New York in the 1970s has a major spike in violent crime after the fiscal crisis. It actually started in the 60s under the John Lindsay administration. And to be honest, if you're making comparisons with England, London has a very, very similar thing happened. Crime increased dramatically into the 80s and 90s. It did affect serial murder to some extent, but it isn't the same kind of experience that we've had. And so I think America is quite unique in this particular time. Obviously, a killer like Jack the Ripper, all the way back in, you know, into the 19th century, is probably one of the most profound examples that maintains itself in the public consciousness, just not just the Victorian and Edwardian England, but also of the United States, actually, as well. So Jack the Ripper was, in terms of the public consciousness of serial killing, most definitely the golden age of murder. After we finished the series, the post-war series, that sort of ends at the beginning of the 1990s, where serial killing does drop off significantly. Violent crime doesn't drop off as much until the middle of the 90s, but serial killing does drop off. The golden age of murder is going to go back before the post-war period and actually focus on some killers from the late 19th century to the beginning of the 20th century in the United States that are as incredible in their actions as Jack the Ripper. So we'll also have that angle as well. But I think, I think, just to list the things, the reasons I've said, I think because of the motor system, because of the level of violence, although violence did increase in the UK in the post-war period, because of the level of violence, because of the use of firearms, many of the serial killers that we actually profiled, some of them just shoot people. It is just a bigger thing. And you know, I suppose, like, in the post-war period, America is the place where the biggest stories kind of still happen, you know, even in England, just sociologically, you know, when people think of making it big in the world, they still think of Hollywood, Vegas, and New York. So it's, you know, it's a big place where big things happen, I suppose. And serial killing is just like anything else.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, you've got 350 million people in the United States too. So it just goes to show, when you've got that many people, that, you know, if you don't look at per capita, you just look at strictly the number of serial killers, there's going to be more, because it's, you know, so many people here too.
Oh, no, most definitely. One interesting thing you know, I haven't really, you know, I didn't prepare this, but one interesting thing would be to compare, say, California or Texas's level of
right.
serial killing and level of basic crime to the UK. That would be really interesting because obviously the UK is twice the population of both of them. But if you put them together, would you get similar numbers in terms of violent crime? It's much higher in the United States if you compare California, Texas to the UK. In terms of serial killing, I don't know.
And the other thing is with the United States too, because every state is so different. I mean, you take states with the biggest cities, you know, like a New York or like a Illinois with Chicago and stuff like that. Those states are obviously going to have higher numbers than say a New Hampshire or Vermont that doesn't have the bigger name cities like that, the bigger inner cities. So it definitely makes a difference in the United States as to which state you're in, you know.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, we find that California is a hotbed for serial killing. We've covered a number of serial killers from California. And the California experience as well with the Mosa system, with the atomization in California, with the amount of transient people that move to California as compared to the rest of the United States makes it a particular, you know, wellspring for this kind of activity in the post-war period. And that's definitely different from other cities and other stories. And the Son of Sam example is obviously specifically different from, you know, in New York from California.
Right. Simeon,
but also we actually have a bunch of serial killers within our series move to California.
Yep.
So, you know, for Hillside sure. Stranglers, but also even our first killer, Harvey Galtman, he moved to California. Richard Ramirez moved to California. And that happens with a number of our killers, actually.
California is kind of the promised land in American history and in the post-war period, too.
So, Simeon, if you had to tell the listeners what to pick one episode for them to go listen to start off on that you feel like is maybe the best or the most interesting, which one would you lead them to?
Well, I'm a different sort of person than some people. I really like the second and third episodes, but they're more a historical panorama. And drawing a lot of things together, and they might be a little bit less accessible if you're more just interested in hearing about a particular case. Those are The Werewolf and the Vampire and The Devil's Mark, which is about Germany. But I think the Son of Sam episode we had a really good rapport. I know Toby was really interested in that. We did an episode I think that's really good, although. We were still trying to figure out how much to cover and not cover on Dean Corll, the Candyman of Houston, Texas, the Pied Piper of the Heights, who is just about the worst serial killer you can possibly read about. And he's less famous than a guy who's very similar to him, John Wayne Gacy, but we just covered. But Dean Corll was, if anything, worse. Now, Dean Corll is also someone who I think is part of the popular imagination, because we imagine the dangerous guy in the white van, you know, and that comes from that case in large part. I think that's a really good one. But as I said, the last three episodes we've done have better audio. I don't know how much that matters. I compared to the content, I don't know, but I think I would point people to our second and third and fifth episode, which was The Werewolf and the Vampire. The Devil's Mark about Germany and the Dean Corll episode and the Son of Sam. But I'm sorry, that was four episodes.
That's what I'm saying. You got 15, you named like four of them.
Yeah, I think I would name the Son of Sam and the Dean Corll episode as the best episode because they're the most story-based episode, but they sprinkle in the kind of other stuff that we do where we try to have a panoramic view on a particular place and time. So we focused on New York in the 1970s. We also focused on Dean Corll and was it Texas, Simeon?
Yes, Houston, Texas, East Texas.
Houston, Texas, and the Heights and the sociology of that place in that time as well, which was really interesting. And then moving into the you know, the story, which is a really interesting and dark story, and really broke, you know, the American sense of neighborliness, you know, in that particular time, because, you know, this is a period where people will, you know, keep leaving their doors open, where the man in the white van wasn't really a feared individual. People kind of talked to strangers. And yeah, that was a really interesting story that we did. I would say that, you know, you get into episode 2 and 3 when you're more comfortable with the podcast.
Yeah, I'd say probably.
And that, but which is where we do some of our best, more sweeping historical stuff. But we've done a lot of really interesting stories sprinkled in with like broader ideas of, you know, how America changes, how it creates the serial killers and that those situations, and how those serial killers really affect America and what Americans do and how they live.
Guys, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. Toby, tell everybody how they can keep up with the Golden Age of Murder, how they can find it on social media and all that stuff.
Well, so there's a number of ways. We have a Facebook page, which is the Golden Age of Murder, you can find, and then at Golden Age of Murder, just type in Golden Age of Murder into Twitter, you'll be able to find it, which is our Twitter page. And you know, you can follow me at Don Tigger, which is an old handle I've had since, you know, I was 18. And you can also follow Simeon at
I always change my Twitter name. I'm sorry.
You change your Twitter name, but you don't change the at.
The at is Pythagosaurus3, but the Twitter name is King Xerox of Persia. That's from an old comedy thing from over 20 years ago. But I'm mainly on Twitter known as this Friendly Owl. But then we have a Twitter feed for the Golden Age of Murder as well. It's a tiny little Twitter. We have that. We just announced the episodes. And
you can listen to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, Podbean, and everywhere else where you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming on. It was a blast.
Thank you for having us.
All right, guys, go give Toby and Simeon a listen. The Golden Age of Murder. Fantastic idea for a podcast. I like what they're mm-hmm. doing with that. So have a blast.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Right, appreciate y'all coming on the show, by the way.
Yes, and we love you guys. You guys are awesome. Give yourself a round of applause unless you're driving.
Woohoo! Whoop whoop!
And then, in all honesty, we love you guys more than you will ever know.
Yes, this is a very true story. So. And we hope that you all have the best, blessed week ever. Love you.